Do you have it? You know, I see today, in fact, it was mentioned from some that were sitting out today, maybe having a cup of coffee. We sure had it. We didn't take the interstate up. We took Highway 25 so we could get up to the Phillips place. And you travel along the river there. It's a really beautiful sight there. You look at the mountains. Just a gorgeous drive. And you feel so at peace. We come in here today, you're not hearing guns blazing outside, and there are places that are just in really bad condition. There are places within our own country where forest fires are still burning out of control, where people are still hurting from people being shot, from people going out and just killing somebody because they feel like it. So we're seeing more of that, and it will get worse, but we still actually have an obligation, when you think about it, to be people that are at peace. And when you think about that, even within a type of Bible study format that I like to pose this as today, when I say peace, what scriptures would you think of? Do you know, when you think about peace, you can go back to Galatians chapter 5. We all know what that is in probability, that that's the fruit of God's Spirit. Well, one of those fruits is peace. So guess what? If we're lacking it, it's nobody else's fault, is it? We've got to have peace within ourselves despite what's going on around us. Even Christ, when he was faced with his huge dilemma, he was telling the apostles, be at peace. And it wasn't that it wasn't a struggle for him, but he also knew how to deal with it. That when he felt that conflict within himself, what did he do? He went to his Father more than one time to get on his knees and appeal for that peace of mind that he needed to face what he would be going through. And God gave it to him. He was able to handle that. So we see a world that's imploding, and yet we can still be people at peace. And yet it's still a challenge, though. It's still difficult. Because one thing that really hurts us as a people, you know, more than eating wheat or lactose intolerant or whatever else you might call it, is stress, isn't it? We all get stressed on things. We still have to learn to give these things to God and let him handle many situations. But you know, studies have shown that many Americans admit that they do not enjoy peace in their lives. Experts claim that we swallow 9 tons of sleeping pills and another 15 tons of aspirin. Then we can add to that another hefty amount of more powerful medications such as tranquilizers. Although our land has only 4% of the world's population, we consume 96% of the world's tranquilizers. So who said that technology and advancement would produce peace? We think it would, and yet I've thought about this many times. The computer, my new smartphone, is not being worked on by a real smart person right now. It's producing more headaches than anything because you've got to figure out how to use it. And by the time that you do, it changes, doesn't it? Or it wears out or something. So it's never ending. Still another 31,482 Americans a couple of years ago decided they had all that they could handle. They were convinced no one and nothing could help them, so they just took their own life. Even medication wouldn't help them. So does it seem like there is a lacking of peace today? Yes, it does affect us, and that's what I'd like to go through today. See, in a world and society that's getting worse every day, with the eroding economy, a very bleak outlook, and especially our understanding of just how bad things will be, does it seem that we can have true peace in our lives? And the answer is, as you would all know, yes. And I'm sure that we all remember the hymn. I know the hymn, usually the song lyric will be thinking, what's a hymn that could go along with this? Can you think of that one? Turn thou from evil, do what is good, seek peace, pursue it. It's something that we do have to pursue. But let's turn to a few testimonies first. Back in Genesis 15, verse 1, knowing that God's not a respecter of persons, I look upon this and I go, this is my hope here. And I hope it would be yours too, because this is a man that followed after God, as we know in verse 1 of Genesis 15. This was a man that's name originally was Abram. So he says, after these things, the word of the Lord came to Abram in a vision, saying, fear not, Abram, I am your shield. Notice these same words that you'll find in the New Testament also, what Christ gave to his followers. Peace, he said, I leave with you, didn't he? Fear not, Abram, I'm your shield and your exceeding great reward. And Abram said, logical question that he was faced with, Lord God, what will you give me, seeing I go childless and the steward of my house is this Eliezer of Damascus? And Abram said, behold, to me you have given no seed, no children. And lo, one born in my house of this servant is my heir. And behold, the word of the Lord came to him, saying, this will not be your heir, but he that will come forth out of your own bowels will be your heir. And he brought him forth abroad and said, look now toward heaven and tell the stars, if you are able to number them. He said to him, so will your descendants be. And it simply says, there's right here between verse 5 and verse 6, I wonder what he felt. Now it says he believed, but he had to be thinking about that for a little bit. I mean, if you've ever been to the point where you've seen the magnitude of the stars, it's very difficult to see sometimes when you're living in the city. I think the best view I ever got was when I was in the Sinai Desert, and there were no lights for probably 100 miles from anywhere. And when you looked up at that sky, it's just magnificent. You couldn't count. There's no way you could count. And then you get these telescopes, if you've ever gone to a place like in northern Kentucky where they've got the planetarium, I would suggest that. You sit back in that, and I would say, if anyone who says there's no God is absolutely a fool. But you keep going, and you see all these stars, and you see the galaxies, and how small that we really are compared to the giant galaxy that we live in. And God says, this is going to be how your descendants will be. Could you imagine at least shaking your head for a second and going, you know, I don't really see exactly how this will be done, but I believe you because you're God. That's what I've come to the point, at least now living in my life. I sometimes say, I don't know exactly how you're going to do this, but I do believe you. I know that God is so great about what, you know, above what we can think. So this is the kind of man that we're talking about here. He believed in the Lord. And it says in verse 6, and God counted it to him for righteousness. He said to him, I am the Lord who brought you out of Ur and the Chaldees to give you this land to inherit it. And he said, Lord God, whereby will I know that I will inherit it? He said to him, bring me a heifer 3 years old, a she-goat of 3 years old, a ram of 3 years old, and a turtle dove, and a young pigeon. And he took him all these and divided them in the midst and laid each piece one against another, but the birds he didn't divide. And when the fowls came down upon the carcasses, Abram drove them away. And when the sun was going down, a deep sleep fell upon Abram, and lo, a horror of great darkness fell upon him. And he said to Abram, know of a certainty that your children will be a stranger in a land that is not theirs, and they will serve them, and the Egyptians, speaking of the Egyptians, will afflict them for 400 years. So he was telling Abram something of what was going to happen in the future. And it sounds, when you think about that, wow, this is going to happen. So no doubt would worry him a bit. He says, and also that nation whom they will serve, I will judge, and afterward they will come out with great substance. And you will go to your fathers in peace. You will be buried in a good old age. I look at 15, verse 15, you know, and sometimes I thought, you know, I'd like to go ahead and just die in a good fight. You know, a good spiritual battle. I've known of others that have said that. You know, just give me maybe a real sword of how they used to fight. And when I look back, you know, those swords hurt. I don't know really how they did that sometimes, because when you came back from a battle, if you've ever just gotten nicked by a knife before, cutting onions or something, that hurts. This is big stuff when you come out with big gashes. Sword fights and sword battles aren't really that great. You know, to be stabbed through with a sword probably would not feel that good. I can think of other better ways to go. I kind of like guns for that matter. Just put one right between my eyes and you go really quick, you know. There are a lot of ways to suffer. But we're looking here. This is what God had told Abram. He said, you're going to go to your fathers. Despite all this, you're going to go to your fathers in peace. What a nice feeling that must have been. Now, we don't know what's going to happen in all our lives, but it doesn't mean that we can't pray for that. We certainly can. God cannot. That also happened to me. Please help me to be on a path and on a program where you can bless me with going to my father's in peace also. Now let's go forward to look at a testimony concerning Jacob. In Genesis 28. Genesis chapter 28, verse 15. He said, "Behold, I am with you, and will keep you all in places where you go, and will bring you again to this land, for I will not leave you until I have done that which I have spoken of you." I would look at this verse as the same for us. If he's called us, he says, "I'm not going to leave you until I've accomplished what I set out to do," the author and finisher of our faith also. Jacob awoke out of his sleep and said, "Surely the Lord is in this place, and I didn't realize it." And he was afraid and said, "How dreadful is this place, and none other but the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven." And he rose up early in the morning and took the stone that he had used for the pillows and set it up for a pillar and poured oil upon the top of it. And the name of that place, called the name of that place Bethel, but the name of that city was called Luz at first. And Jacob vowed a vow saying, "If God will be with me and will keep me in this way that I will go, I will give me bread to eat and raiment and clothing to put on." It's interesting how patient God was with him there, because when you look at this, it's kind of the other way around, isn't it? See, Jacob was still the supplanter, and he had to learn what God had prepared for him. So God took, if you remember, God took a supplanter to another supplanter. So we see that Laban supplanted Jacob so he could kind of get a dose of his own medicine for about 14 years. Until he had learned, and God was the author and finisher of his faith also. But he said, "So that I come again to my father's house in peace, then you will be the Lord my God. And this stone which I have set for a pillar will be God's house. And all of that you will give me, I will surely give the tenth to you." Now we can see again, according to the pattern, he wasn't always at peace, was he, for quite a long time. Until he went through that, had to deal with Laban, had to face Esau. And could you imagine of a man being more prepared than this person was to be at peace? He had gone through it all. He was expecting to be killed by Esau, but he had to put it in God's hands. He didn't know what the outcome was going to be with the marriages and everything else, but God kept telling him, "I'll be with you." And by the way, he probably looked back on that and probably thought, "Yeah, it is the other way around. As long as I serve you and give the tenth, you'll bless me and protect me." And his name was changed, wasn't it? And he went to his father's in peace. Once again, I see the same thing. Why would it be any different for the people of God also? Genesis chapter 41. Genesis 41. Joseph knew a little bit about it too, but he had to learn it. He was not always at peace, but he had his times of peace, no doubt. Not knowing always what was going on, was in prison for quite a while. But God was using him now to work with this man called Pharaoh in verse 14 of Genesis 41. Then Pharaoh sent and called Joseph, and they brought him hastily out of the dungeon and shaved himself and changed his clothing and came into Pharaoh. There is a movie out there, by the way. I'd like to actually bring a copy here. It's called Joseph. There probably are a couple different movies, so I'll have to specify that. But it portrays a pretty good picture, I think, of what happened to where he's kind of not knowing what's going on here when they bring him out of the dungeon rapidly, and all of a sudden they throw water on him and start washing him. He starts laughing in the movie because he's just all of a sudden knows that, no, I'm not gonna have my head taken off today. It was for a different purpose. So it says, Pharaoh called Joseph and said, "I've dreamed a dream, and there is none who can interpret it, and I've heard say of you that you can understand the dream to interpret it." And Joseph answered Pharaoh, saying, "It is not me, but God will give Pharaoh an answer of peace." So Joseph was instrumental and understood, obviously, what peace was, despite his dilemma of being in prison. Now, peace is so important to God that we even get an offering aspect. Let's go to Exodus chapter 20. Exodus chapter 20, and we'll begin here in verse 16. Verse 16, where it gets into this next aspect of the commandments here. In verse 16, it says, "You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife, nor his manservant, nor his maidservant, nor his ox, nor is asked nor anything that is your neighbor's. And all the people saw the thunderings and lightnings and the noise of the trumpet and the mountain smoking. And when people saw it, they removed and stood far off. And they said, speak with us and we'll hear. But let not God speak with us, lest we die. Stop right there for a second. How would you feel? Well, if you were like a carnal Israelite, you'd probably feel the same way. But I would think, right now, with God's Spirit, you'd want to sit down with Him. Say, I'd almost like to talk personally. Moses did it, didn't he? Moses got to the point where he asked God, can I see you? And God even allowed that portion of his hind parts to be seen by Moses. Because when you're striving to do what's right, when you're trying to live that way, obviously Israel wasn't, so there was fear in them, even to the point they said, we don't want to talk with them. It was their entire heart and attitude. It's different for us, isn't it? We can see the difference when we look back at the testimonies of how we also can be at peace with God. But it's right on the heels here of God's law, which brings to mind the scripture I didn't even write down today, one of my favorites also, Psalm 119, verse 165. Great peace have those who love your law, and nothing will offend them. Think about that sometime if we ever get offended. We don't need to get offended. If you're secure in what you believe and what you feel and in your relationship with God, there's nothing that anybody should say that should offend you. Oh, just look at it and go, that's the way they feel. I might be sorry if they feel that way, but I know the way I feel. I know the way that I believe, and I'm secure in my relationship with God. And I'm striving to go this way. There's a lot to be learned within the scriptures here. So verse 21, it continues, the people stood afar off, and Moses drew near to the thick darkness where God was. And the Lord said to Moses, thus you shall say to the children of Israel, you have seen that I have talked with you from heaven. You will not make of me gods of silver, neither shall you make gods of gold. An altar of earth will you make to me, and you will sacrifice there on your burnt offerings and your peace offerings. Peace offerings. There had to be reconciliation. Do you remember what it says? It brings to mind the scripture that talks about before you bring your offering before God, you better be at peace with your brother. Don't be bringing me some kind of offering and saying, oh God, I love you and I want to give you my offering. Well, you got a bone to pick with someone else. That's what it's saying. There's got to be reconciliation. There always has to be reconciliation before we even bring an offering before God. So there was a peace offering that was offered here. He said, your sheep and your oxen and all the places where I record my name, I will come to you and I will bless you. But there had to be peace. God cannot exist within calamity. And that will all be taken care of. There's going to be lots of war before the calamity, but all because of man's breaking God's law and rejecting God. Leviticus 23, we'll go here. This points out a time of which we've passed already, the time of Pentecost. Leviticus 23, but even here on this holy day, there was a peace offering that was given. In verse 16, Leviticus 23, we can see, even to the morrow after the seventh Sabbath, you will number 50 days, and you will offer a new meat offering to the Lord. And you shall bring out of your habitations two wave loaves of 2/10 deals. They will be fine flour. They will be baked with leaven. They are the first fruits. These were the representations of us, the first fruits. And you shall offer with the bread 7 lambs without blemish of the first year, 1 young bullock and 2 rams, and they will be for a burnt offering to the Lord with their meat offering and the drink offerings, even an offering made by fire of sweet savor to the Lord. Then you will sacrifice 1 kid of the goats for a sin offering and 2 lambs of the first year for a sacrifice of peace offerings. And all this symbolism, it was to reflect on the importance of what God was trying to put across. The priest will wave them with the bread of the first fruits and for a wave offering before the Lord. With the 2 lambs, they will be holy to the Lord for the priest. Once again, symbolizing how important this was. I say this because as we go back to the testimony, peace is important with God in our lives, individually and collectively. Who likes calamity? You know, we've been through a couple splits, or maybe somebody's been. Who likes those? They're horrible, aren't they? Nobody likes. Oh, bring another one on. I'm looking forward to that. You know, the greatest part after something like that is peace. It's so wonderful going to somewhere, coming to church, going to a feast where there's no friction, where you can just be at peace. There's nothing like it. And I certainly have felt that the past couple years. And it's been a wonderful experience. And coming to churches where you can be at peace. Leviticus 26, as long as we're there, let's go up a couple chapters to Leviticus chapter 26 and verse 1. A promise to the Israelites if they simply would follow his ways. And I read this too, because despite the calamity in our land, you know, could you imagine going out and worrying about just going for a run or a walk, and though we have to be careful, you know, I just felt after God's called me, if he wants me out, I'll be out. If somebody wants to take me out and that's his will, then so be it. Because God's got lots of messengers and protective angels that I know surround us. So if it's his purpose, then so be it. I just don't worry about it. And I remember that being reflected when I first went to China in 1983. I was a little bit worried about that, especially when I was first called. Would you like to go to China? And I thought, am I expendable? Am I just one of those ones that, we can, you know, if something happens, we lose Evans, no big loss. And let's have him take the front lines here. That's actually kind of running through your mind. This is a new program. I'm going, China? China? And I actually told Mr. Salyer, I said, would you mind if I think about this? And I went back across the street and I was cutting hedges. And I'm cutting the hedges. And I'm going, China? China? Then I just stopped. And he just said, why not? Called him back within, I think, about 20 minutes and said, sure, I'll go. And I remember going to that airport as we flew in. Normally you go around here and they didn't have all the stuff that we've got now with the transportation protection and all that. They had soldiers with guns. Military men that would check your passports. And I kind of raised my eye. And I said, you know something? Sometimes I'm filled with a little bit of humor, but these guys I don't think I'm going to joke with. Because I might say something that's not totally right in their language. So, but it's something, you know, and as we went throughout China, and when we went to Israel, in fact, when we were confronted by an Egyptian guard unit, we were at peace. I didn't worry. I said, we're God's people, and nothing happens to us unless God says so. And it's a wonderful feeling to have, that despite what's going on around here, nothing happens to God's elect unless he says so. That's available in the scriptures. How much peace can that really bring to us in understanding and believing God for what he says? So he tells Israel this. In verse 1, you'll make no idols, nor graven image, neither rear up a standing image, neither will you set up any image of stone in your land. Bow to it. I'm the Lord your God. You'll keep my Sabbaths. You'll reverence my sanctuary. I am the Lord. So you talked about this, and I look at this word reverence. And a scripture was shown about that, about the women. There's a natural reverence that they have in the position that God's given to them, or a position that they learn to that point where it even said at one point, could you imagine any of the wives here, the women, calling their husbands master? You know, in today's day and age, you go, boof. Really, what a joke. Well, that's the reverence he was talking about, but it was a reverence to a person who earned that respect, wasn't it? He wasn't pushing Sarah all over the place or using her. He said, if you walk in my statutes, keep my commandments and do them, then I'll give you rain in due season, and the land will yield its increase, and the tree of the field will yield its fruit. And your threshing will reach to the vintage, and the vintage will reach to the sowing time, and you'll eat your bread to the full and dwell in your land safely. We probably won't get this anymore. You probably won't see this anymore, but you will see it in the millennium. Isn't that going to be neat? when God's blessing, when people start to keep the land rest, when you're not messing genetically with what God made, we're going to have this happen. The vintages that will take place like that is going to be a wonderful sight to see. But he was telling the Israelites, and this is the way it was, as long as they obeyed God. They got their rain in due season. He said in verse 6, "And I will give peace in the land, and you will lie down, and none will make you afraid." I remember as a kid, back in a suburb of Detroit, I know we had our riots around the 1967, I believe, and we had curfew at the time, but I was a kid. I wasn't worried about anything. Now, they had to worry downtown Detroit, but here in the suburb, we had screens that you would close because we didn't have air conditioning at the time, so you left your door open. I mean, anybody could pop their hand through a screen and open the door and come in. Even with locks today, it's possible to do that. But I remember growing up as a kid, it was pretty nice to have peace as a child. Not everybody maybe was able to experience that. It's one of the things I remember at having peace. God gave this to Israel as long as they obeyed his ways. He says, "You will chase your enemies. They'll fall before you as the sword." We've got the testimonies to show and to prove that. "Five of you will chase 100. 100 of you will put 10,000 to flight, and your enemies will fall before you by the sword. For I have respect to you, and to make you fruitful, and to multiply you, establish my covenant with you. And you will eat old store, and bring forth old because of the new. And I will set my tabernacle among you, and my soul will not abhor you. And I will walk among you, and be your God, and you will be my people." That is destined to happen once again. Numbers chapter 10. Numbers 10. And beginning in verse 10. Now we can see throughout, in fact, as we come up to the holy days, especially one regarded as the Feast of Trumpets, God used these in different ways. And you get to the time of the Feast of Trumpets, and it was really an instrument called a shofar that was used. Because we recognize on the Feast of Trumpets, when Christ returns, the shofar will blow. That's the one you're going to be listening. It's not going to be Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass. Though they had different trumpets blown at that time, the shofar was blown on that day because it was a signal of war. Trumpets pictures that time. So here it says in verse 10 of Numbers 10, "In the day of your gladness and in your solemn days, in the beginnings of your months, you will blow with the trumpets over your burnt offerings and over the sacrifices of your peace offerings, that they would be to you for a memorial before you God. I am the Lord your God." My question is are there peace offerings today? There most certainly are. Let's go to Philippians chapter 4, verse 6. Philippians 4, verse 6. It's one of those, it's almost easy to say, hard to do type thing. Here we are in a very stressful society, but this is what the people of God have got to look through. We've got to get back to the meditation that David had and say, why am I anxious? Why am I being stressed out? Who's doing it to me? And then question ourselves and take a look at ourselves in the mirror. What can I do about this? If the answer is nothing, then don't do anything and stand still and watch the salvation of God. If you can, then go ahead and do something and ask God for wisdom on how to do it. And understand that he'll cover us. He is our shield and exceeding reward, as he told Abram. Philippians 4, verse 6, "Be anxious for nothing, but in everything, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God." That happened today. I listened to these prayers pretty carefully. And I was very grateful because there was an attitude of thanksgiving that God even has us here in the first place. And to ask his blessings upon all the preparation with thanksgiving. It's a wonderful attitude it strikes us into, isn't it? So this is where Paul had encouraged the Philippians to do this. And look at the result. Verse 7, "And the peace of God, which surpasses or transcends all understanding, will keep your hearts and minds through Jesus Christ." You know, we've got something called the fruits of the Spirit. When a Christian possesses the fruit of the Spirit called peace, it's something that this world can't understand. They can say it. You know, people are saying I love you all day. Then they'll jam a knife into your back, won't they? I'm hearing I love you all the time. I love you. I love you this. Really? Come on. And they're saying peace all the time. It says they'll say peace. Oh, there's going to be peace in Israel. But not until after there's war. Not until after Christ returns. There can't be. It's not possible to have peace in Israel. It's impossible. No one can do it. Senator Kerry, sorry, nice try. It's not going to happen. Because you would have to change the hearts of the people. That's not going to happen. When there's hate and there's controversy, you're not going to fix that. You can't go in there and go, can't we let bygones be bygones? With a carnal mind, not possible. It won't be done until Christ returns. This is the peace of God which surpasses all understanding. So he says in verse 8, finally, whatever things are true, honest, just, pure, lovely, good report, if there's any virtue, any praise, think about these things. Those things which you have learned, received, and heard, and seen, do. And the God of peace, will be with you. Yes, it's a peace of God that we can have. That's in that because of that begettal. We have an amount of peace. Every one of us that's got God's Spirit has got an amount of peace. I'd like to have a lot of it. Wouldn't you? That any time something confronts you that could be worrisome, you'll maybe think about it, and the next split second go, what can I do about it? They call a worry wart. A worry wart is somebody that worries they can't do anything about it. And there are many, many of those out there, and they just suffer. They just suffer a lot of stress in their lives because they worry about something they can't do anything about. As I said, if you can do something about it, do it. Have at it. And ask God for wisdom and understanding. But God says He'll be with us. Isaiah chapter 26. Isaiah 26. Not to mention chapter 9, verse 6, what was Christ called? The Prince of Peace. He's known as the Prince of Peace. Once again, we see something that's incredibly important before God. And when I see something like that, you know, for a true Christian, for a first fruit, we should be going, it's almost like going to maybe a grocery store. I got to get me some of that. I want that. Yeah, I want two of those and some of those there. Peace. Wow. And joy. But specifically, we're honing in on this today. Isaiah 26, verse 3, you will keep him in perfect peace whose mind is stayed on you because he trusts you. See, it does have to do with that, doesn't it? It has to do with whether you believe or not that God is really going to do what he said. Oh, we can also say, here's the part. I know what some may be thinking. Problem is, I don't always do my part. That's true, and that's where we underestimate God's mercy. Because every time we get on our knees and go, Father, forgive me for my lack of faith, my lack of trust, and strengthen me with your Spirit, he is so merciful. That we were talking one day, I can't remember who it was, but if you remember the old City Slickers movie, the one guy says, you know, every day is a do-over, isn't it? And it really, in a sense, is. We come before God, we can stand up, and we can go, I need to do this over again. How merciful God is. And he says he'll be with you. He'll keep you in perfect peace. Verse 12, it says, Lord, you will ordain peace for us, for you have wrought all our works in us. So everything that we do that comes from God that's good produces that peace. I know we have it. I know we have some of that. But what I'm preaching before you today is a bit of a lifesaver, isn't it? So all I'm doing is, you can have more, you know, because at the end of Galatians 5, it says, of which there is no such law, you can have as much as you want. I like a lot of this, because we are facing a world of conflict. And as we try to figure this out, as we talked about it today, we said, how can we produce a little bit more peace in our lives? Stop watching and listen to this negative garbage that's out there. Now, I know it's good to follow and watch things that are happening around us, but to constantly get pounded by, this, they're not doing this, they're not doing, I already know they're not doing it. I need to listen to somebody else talk about it. And all of a sudden, you get yourself in a mood, you're going, this is horrible. This whole place is blown up around us. We already know that. When Christ told his disciples, he said, things are going to get bad here, but I want to tell you to be at peace because it's got to take place. And even though you're in the midst of a mess, you can actually be at peace. Perfect peace. Hebrews chapter 13, verse 20. Just a couple of scriptures left here. Hebrews chapter 13, and there's a lot of them in here if you really want to look up peace. Hebrews 13, verse 20. He is called here, now he was referred to in Isaiah as the Prince of Peace. In Hebrews 13, verse 20 here, he's called the God of Peace. Now the God of Peace that brought again from the dead our Lord Jesus, he's speaking here of the Father now. Christ is referred to as the Prince of Peace. The Father is here called the God of Peace. Through the blood of the everlasting covenant, make you perfect in every good work to do His will, working in you that is well-pleasing in His sight, through Jesus Christ, to whom be glory forever and ever. That's just the way it is. Back a couple pages here to Hebrews chapter 7. As long as we're in Hebrews, there's another one that touches on this. In Hebrews chapter 7. Hebrews chapter 7 and verse 2, or actually verse 1 here. Hebrews 7 verse 1, for this Melchizedek, king of Salem, priest of the Most High God, who met Abram returning from the slaughter of the kings and blessed him, to whom also Abraham gave a tenth part of all, first being translated the king of righteousness, and then also the king of Salem, meaning the king of peace. So how ironic it is today, isn't it, to have a city called Jerusalem where there's not been peace? That means if there's been any conflict, it's always centered around that place and will until the true King of Peace has to come back and show them this is what it's really like. This name has got to be established, but it's got to be true. This is a farce. You call something this? Really? That's peace? Far from it. Matthew chapter 5, verse 9. We've got a job to do also. Matthew 5, verse 9. Because within the conflicts that we've talked about, we still have a job to do with our scattered brethren that are around the world. Not that you can necessarily do anything with somebody maybe who is in Montana or Illinois, but as God gives us the opportunity, we can certainly be something called bridge builders. If you look at what's happened in the church, it really goes beyond the physical, doesn't it? When you think about what's happened, even to our physical churches, who's been behind it? Who's been the mastermind behind the division? It's been Satan. He's just used humans as tools. But see, God can also use humans as tools to be peacemakers. And that's what he said. He said in Matthew 5, he says, blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called the sons of God. These are the ones that will follow the God of peace. These are whom that carry on that characteristic and those qualities of peace. One more here before we finish in James chapter 3. In James 3, James chapter 3, let's look at verse 13. Who is wise and understanding among you? Let him show by good conduct that his works are done in meekness of wisdom. But if you have bitter envy and self-seeking in your hearts, do not boast and lie against the truth like we do about Jerusalem or anything else we would call peace today. They say peace, peace, when there is no peace, as the Bible says. This wisdom is not descended from above, but it's earthly, it's sensual, it's demonic. For where envy and self-seeking exist, that's where confusion and every evil thing will be there. And that's obviously the opposite of peace. But the wisdom that's from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. Now the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. And we're learning that, aren't we? It's really a great thing to learn because sometimes it could be a challenge. We've got to learn not to be offended, Because sometimes we're going to confront people that don't think the way we do. What are you going to do? Are you going to get all bent out of shape? Sometimes we have. You've probably heard somebody talk to you, and it just bothers you to no end. How come they think that way? I don't know. I've thought about that, but I can't change somebody. But I'm not going to let them change me from being one who is at peace to something, well, that person just really bothers me. You know, and we talk about that sometimes. Yeah, I don't like what's going on in our country. I've told you before I'd fire all of Congress if I had the opportunity, but I don't, and I can't. And thankfully, I've got to take my eyes off of looking at Congress and go back to the mayor and say, what about this guy that I'm seeing right in the mirror? Where's his peace right now? Because God already said that all these other things were going to take place and happen. Am I at peace, or I'm letting these things really bother me and fire me up and go, I'd fire all of them? Where you get it in your face. We can say what we might do as leaders and things of that nature, and that would be fine, but to get it stirred up to where it really alters your countenance, that's not right. We're learning to be peacemakers, and we're learning to be at peace. So I hope this helps for this coming week, that we can seek peace and pursue it. We'll finish here in Numbers chapter 6 and verse 22, something that God said to Moses, that he says to us today. And so I'll finish with this. Numbers 6, verse 22, the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the children of Israel and to his sons, saying, in this way will you bless the children of Israel, saying to them, the Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face to shine upon you and gracious to you. The Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace.